welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We are broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. So if you're tuning in through the AM, FM bands and things of that nature, there is a 128K quality super stream that you can listen to. It's like channeling David Rockefeller through a magical Egyptian scepter with a crystally thingy on it. It's powerful stuff. My very special guest today. We're going to have him on for 2 hours. There's a lot to discuss, lots of recent news and things like that. And those of you who have been listening to American Freedom Radio would have just been listening to the fabulous Kevin Barrett's Truth Jihad Radio. And I don't want to insult Kevin or do anything like that during the show. Personally, I like Kevin. He's incredible. He's got skills and stuff like that. But there's been this incident with the 9/11 Truth Movement involving Kevin and involving my guest Alfred Weber and Andrew Brashago. Just recently, there's been this big brouhaha over it, and things flying back and forth, accusations of being an agent in plants and all this sort of stuff. And when I see people arguing with each other, particularly intelligent men, I wonder, what is it that these people are actually arguing over? Because intelligent men should be able to at least comprehend and understand what each other's going on about, and then discern whether or not they're personally trying to attack and threaten you, and hence have made themselves an enemy. Or at least that's what should happen. But also, there is a manner of pride, upbringing, and many other things that come into this, where misunderstandings can be hyped up into like a war, where no conflict should even truly exist, and there was no ill intent on the other party. So I find the only way to really find out what the heck is going on here is to let each party who's involved speak their piece in an open format, so that I can understand from each person's point of view, so that I got the whole picture. And I want to figure this one out. And I also want to have Kevin on after this thing as well. And we have Andrew Brashago and Bernie Mendez in about 2 weeks' time coming on, one day after the other, for 2 hours each, to also explain their side of the story too. So this is part of a series kind of thing. So without further ado, and I apologize for the long-winded intro, my very special guest, Alfred Labremont Weber. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I guess I'm a bit in an information vacuum, just because of the crisscross of emails and things. I didn't realize that I was going to be on this program, and then I prepared for a different topic.
We've got a whole 2 hours, so we can cover other topic as well.
So what I'd like to do to address the 9/11 war crimes tribunal issue is just very briefly type into your chat, Vinny, the website of the 9/11 War Crimes Tribunal. Let's see, warcrimestribunal.org. There we go. That's the website of the 9/11 War Crimes Tribunal, and that's a citizens. Tribunal of Conscience in the area of 9/11, and its mission is to bring to justice the individuals who have, for whom there is probable cause that they have been involved in or been part of a common plan for the false flag operation of September 11, 2001, which is a complex event in itself, because on examination, that event, part of it, apparently, was to start a genocidal war of aggression in Afghanistan. So that's from an international legal point of view, these acts are inseparable.
Alfred, you seem to have frozen there. You might want to flick off your webcam if you can. There's a bit of a problem with the connection. AFR, if you'd be so kind as to reconnect Alfred, that'd be nice. But also, I wanted to put in something personally here while we're waiting for Alfred to reconnect. Is that basically there's many many theories about 9/11 and a lot of evidence associated with these theories that kind of makes them kind of credible, right? Like for example, there's a lot of unknowns in 9/11. Like we don't know what caused that or how that happened, but we've got lots of evidence that would suggest other things. And there's three working theories that I've kind of been able to look at. There's Dr. Judy Wood's theory about directed free energy weapons and stuff like that. Just kind of basically you put a static field on any matter and then you apply a charge to that static field within it and it forces the molecules to all fly apart. And that's one working theory. Other working theory is the conventional one, which is the, of course, controlled demolition, which they found spheres and of molten iron and stuff like that. That's kind of indicative of thermite or thermate, nanothermite kind of thing. Yeah. I believe Alfred's back now, but just one last second. So we've got these two working theories of the directed free energy weapons being used on 9/11, another working theory about controlled demolition and nanothermite, and then there's the other one from former Russian intelligence officer Dmitry Khalazov, who says that there were nuclear devices planted in the buildings during the construction as a contingency for controlled demolition, because it would be impossible to rig those buildings or something of that nature, and it has certain evidence. So you got those three working theories, right? And I'm of the opinion that there's elements of all of them that are correct and that all of them may have actually been implemented simultaneously so that everybody who looks into 9/11 at all will be captured by one of these three and fight with everybody else who promotes any of the other two. And so you get everybody fighting with each other and nobody actually finds out who the real criminals are because they're too busy finding out who's an agent of the criminals instead of who are the criminals themselves.
Okay, so I'm back on now.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
And I'm going to keep my webcam off because I seem to have been somehow not knocked off, but we were talking about the 9/11 War Crimes Tribunal, so that we're a tribunal of conscience, and we're coming at this from a tribunal's point of view. Now, I'm also a war crimes judge on the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal, which I've been for the past 5 years, and we have come down with two verdicts, one in November 22nd, 2011, against George W. Bush and Tony Blair for war crimes and crimes against peace for the invasion of Iraq, and a second one in May of this year for war crimes against Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and their lawyers, Alberto Gonzalez and others, for torture in Iraq. So I'm familiar with how tribunals of conscience work, and I'm looking at this from the point of view of a judge. One of the primary things of a tribunal of conscience is that it's independent. It is not at the mercy of the organizers, and it is not at the mercy of the witnesses. The judges determine the procedure. The judges determine how witnesses, evidence is given, and which witnesses are called. And so the dispute here that arose between the tribunal, and I must emphasize that it is not Alfred Weber, but it is the War Crimes Tribunal that is in dispute here. And the tribunal consists of two judges and four witnesses to date. The tribunal judges are myself, Alfred Lambert Weber, and Constance Fogel. Connie Fogel is a distinguished woman lawyer, a Canadian lawyer, former leader of the Canadian Action Party, which would be something like the, you know, one of the third parties in the U.S. You know, I'm not sure what the New Zealand.
Well, we've got Green parties and New Zealand First parties and National and National Labour are like the Republican and Democrat equivalent. So yeah, we know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So one of the things that's significant is that Judge Fogel's party, the Canadian Action Party, had gone on record as taking a position for an independent inquiry into the events of 9/11. So they were on record at that point. Now, what I've done, because and then there are four witnesses, four independent witnesses with a tribunal, two who were with the Vancouver 9/11 hearings organized by Kevin Barrett and Jim Fetzer. And the two of those are Susan Lindauer, who has written a book and was a former CIA asset at the UN, who, by her own account, was trying to inform the White House that 9/11 was going to occur because she was hearing from it from her sources at the UN prior to 9/11 and was imprisoned by the U.S. for and kept in prison for several years under psychiatric drugs. And the other is Dean Hartwell, who is an attorney and a witness. And then two of the other witnesses are independent scientist Loren Moray, whose affidavit we had asked for, and of course Andrew D. Bushago, who has eyewitness testimony of 1971 dealing directly with Donald H. Rumsfeld and his state of mind as to the events of 9/11 in 1971, which is unique testimony. So that's the tribunal, and that's the entity which is being attacked, whose independence is being attacked in biased journal articles. And so in response, what we have done is to create a tribunal website that sets out the record of email correspondence between myself and then when I became a judge and invited Judge Fogel onto the tribunal, and then the moment that the tribunal was formed, which under natural law, which would have occurred on June 15th to 17th, as each of the speakers at the June 15th to 17th, 2012 Vancouver hearing spoke, I went up and administered an oath to them. And it was as each of the speakers, I administered that oath, the tribunal itself then came into being. These are as a judicial entity. And that's where we acquired authority, natural law, under Geneva Conventions, under other statutes, and we become an independent judicial entity, impervious of
from direction and interference. Yeah, okay. Well, we're coming up to break now, Alfred. And once you make that oath and you become an entity that's prohibited from interference, does that mean that everything that you said or promised to talk about or promised to explore suddenly becomes on the table again? Because if it's part of the evidence, you've got to look at it. And we'll be right back after the break.
Rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. Right and left are symmetrical on the puppet master's tentacles. The two sides are identical. The troops are not ejectable. Forming a prophecy, making the Jordan come out of me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about playing both sides. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio, keeping it bankster. For all your hardcore criminality mofos out there who are exposing scumbaggery, and basically you just need a little bit of a therapy each day, you know. It's just like, hey, let's tune into the Vinny Eastwood Show and let's have a few cackles, because otherwise, you know, you can go freaking insane. And we've had a little few problems with Alfred Scott, so we've now got him up on the phone. Alfred, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, you talked to me over the break about the details of this tribunal and all of that kind of stuff, but the audience wasn't parlay to that conversation. The last thing they heard was, as soon as you got that tribunal official, it means that you are become immune from interference.
So. Yeah. Let me kind of very quickly address all of the allegations that Fetzer and Barrett came up with. By the way, the Fetzer-Barrett machine has gone awfully quiet ever since we released all of the emails. I mean, there's absolutely nothing there. And the first email, and people can go to 9911, 911, then warcrimestribunal.org. That's 911. warcrimestribunal.org, and all of the correspondence in there is completely transparent. The first email is on February 17th, 2012. This is about 4 months in advance of the June 15th to 17th Vancouver hearings. And I had heard about them, so I wrote an email to Fetzer and Barrett with copies to Lorraine Murray and to another woman who had met in Madison, Wisconsin at the 9/11 conference there, saying, oh, Jim and Kevin, I hear you're going to do something in Vancouver. That's great. However, I think that you're not looking at some important evidence. And I requested that they make Andy Bishago a witness, a speaker at the conference. And that's what I requested in that email. And I set out all of my articles there talking about DARPA secret time travel in 9/11. It's all there. It's all laid out in that initial email. to Barrett and to Fetzer. Then they responded back and said, well, gee, that's a great idea. And emails went back and forth, and then all of a sudden they wanted to make me a judge. So I said, okay, I'll be a judge, because I was a judge in the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal, and we had just successfully convicted George W. Bush and Tony Blair, which is now going worldwide. I mean, those gentlemen cannot travel outside of their countries. So I said, fine, and then they asked me to recruit other high-level jurists, which I did. I wrote Professor Francis Boyle, who's the chief prosecutor at the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Commission, and he wrote back saying that he was sorry, but he was had, you know, other commitments for that weekend of June 15 to 17. And I contacted our Judge Constance Connie Fogel, former leader of the Canadian Action Party, and she said yes, that she would. And meanwhile, I think Fetzer and Barrett tried to contact other people, and they were not successful. So we had a two-tribunal judgeship. In the meantime, no commitments were made whatsoever with regard to limiting the scope of witnesses or evidence. Quite the contrary, I had introduced myself to them by saying, the most important witness here is Andrew D. Bishago and his time travel evidence. And if you continue to gatekeep on this, you're skewing the evidence, because this shows that Donald H. Rumsfeld and the Nixon cabinet, which includes Henry Alfred Kissinger, had prior knowledge of 9/11 back in 1971, 30 years prior to the event. So that's what stood. And then I started, by the way, all of this work is without compensation on a volunteer basis. So I started the hard work then of preparing for the hearings. At the hearings, Judge Fogel and I, she's also working on a volunteer basis. We heard the 20-some-odd witnesses. We swore them in, and then after the hearings, I issued a request for written submissions, written evidentiary submissions. And I informed Fetzer, and I informed the organizers that we would be going after additional witnesses who were not speakers. And what came back in the submissions was really quite disappointing. First of all, only about half of the witnesses at most made submissions, and they submitted as to what we call the usual suspects, and that is Israeli and U.S. citizens. Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, one fellow who has made a lot of noise, one particular witness, you know, he submitted a posse of FBI agents who were picking up debris outside of the Pentagon after the alleged plane crash there, which is really not a plane crash, but probably internal explosions in the Pentagon. Now, this is where the crucial difference between 9/11 research, which has gone on for the last 10 years, which is, you know, how was it done and what kind of widgets did what to make what do what, and the question of criminal liability, which is who did what? What persons are responsible? And what we found is that the 9/11 movement in the 11 years since the event have totally avoided the issue of criminal liability. That is, who is responsible for 9/11? And so what we got is just a list of the the usual suspects. And so as a tribunal, I knew that this was not at all. This list of Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld, who were just elected shills for the true power behind 9/11, which is the bloodline bankers and the royals, had not been named, and that's what the research shows. So we were fortunate in having said we were going to call other witnesses, and in the request for submissions, the day, 1 or 2 days after the conclusion of the hearings, we had sent formal written requests to Loren Murray and Andrew D. Bushago, and they were, all of this was conducted on a common email list set out by the tribunal. So all of the witnesses, including Bushago and Loren Murray's email names and lists, along with Barrett and Fetzer's, were on there from June 17th forward. They were all on there on the requests, on the comments, and on everything. This was all done transparently and openly. And so finally, we had to give various extensions until we gave a final extension to October 1st, because our action plan calls for the public release of the indictment of the tribunal on January 22nd, 2013, 2 days after the next president of the United States is inaugurated. Now, we found ourselves, until we had the affidavits of Loren Murray and Andrew D. Bushago, stymied. And it is only through the affidavit of Andrew D. Bushago with eyewitness testimony that the 1971 Nixon cabinet, which included Donald H. Rumsfeld and Henry Alfred Kissinger, had prior knowledge of there's probable cause to believe, and that's our legal standard here is probable cause, because we're acting at this stage almost as a grand jury. We're issuing an indictment and acting as a grand jury. And so it is Andrew D. Bushago's affidavit which gives the probable cause to find that Donald H. Rumsfeld and Henry Alfred Kissinger had probable cause to know about 9/11 in 1971, and that Henry Alfred Kissinger serves as a go-between to the City of London banking bloodlines led by Lord Rothschild and others, and the British Crown, namely Elizabeth Windsor and her consort, and Canadian citizens. And this comes from the affidavit of Loren Murray. So it's that joint affidavit then that gives us the individuals at the top of the triangle, the executive committee of the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization that put into effect the false flag of 9/11 and a number of these other wars composed of UK, French, and Canadian citizens, that allows us to have jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court. And that's what we're pursuing now, to get together with the cooperation of Judge Fernando Imposimato, who is the honorary president of the Supreme Court of Italy and former chief investigative judge of Italy. He's the person who busted Operation Gladio and threw the CIA out of Italy. And he announced that he intends to bring 9/11 to the International Criminal Court. Well, we contacted him on behalf of the tribunal, and he and I have a close rapport as fellow war crimes judges, and we're back and forth. And so he had a meeting with the at the ICC level 2 weeks ago with regard to prosecution of 9/11, and Fetzer and Barrett are tried to prohibit our tribunal from including the affidavits of Loren Murray and Andrew D. Bashago, which would have limited the court to their evidentiary submissions, which solely named U.S. citizens and Israeli citizens, neither of whom have signed the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, the United States and Israel, so that this matter could not be taken to the International Criminal Court. And Fetzer and Barrett's strategy, its functional effect was to defeat the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court over 9/11. And that's why this tribunal held firm in the face of over 2 months of vilification of the tribunal led by Fetzer and Barrett on an email list against us and in public articles. Now, independently, witnesses are not coming forward that are going to write articles showing what the proper that the tribunal has followed proper proceedings and rejecting the actions of Fetzer and Barrett objectively. And both Fetzer and Barrett have grown very quiet ever since the full record of our correspondence has been released, which Fetzer had in his possession all along. So,
well, Alfred, I think we'll have to leave it on that, conclusion and cliffhanger right there. We'll be right back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest from exopolitics.com is Alfred Labramont Weber, judge and educational dude who will put the truth out no matter what the consequence might be, because it's the truth. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
I got some so-called friends, they'll smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And I want to also mention to people that when you're listening to lots of radio networks and stuff like that, I encourage people to do this. But in my opinion, and I've done my searching and I've done my research, I've had a look at all the other radio show hosts, and it's like, there ain't really nothing to compete with AFR at the end of the day. You know, just great lineup and no taboo topics. Everybody's having fun. It's just great listening all the way through. Don't just listen to my show. Listen to the show before it, the show after it, and freaking all of them if you can. But you've only got a set amount of time on this universe. You've got to spend it on stuff that's really worth your time, I think. Alfred Labramont Weber is my guest. Now, coming back from break, you said that after you released all these emails that Jim Fetzer had them the whole time. What have you drawn a conclusion from that? I mean,
well, look, their email list of vilification has gone silent because I published all of these emails. Finally, Jim Fetzer has gone silent, and Kevin Barrett has gone silent, and hopefully they're off to better things. we at the court, in a notice, we took all of their documents from all of the witnesses who did make submissions, and we returned all of their affidavits and evidences as per their request in a very conciliatory letter, and we said, look, here is all your evidence, and we urge you to stop this climate of confrontation, and we urge you to go out and form your own tribunal. And we gave them a lengthy transcript from Alice Walker at the Russell Tribunal in New York, at the Russell Tribunal on Palestine. You know, and so if they're so hot to trot, they're 19 or so witnesses, and they are all hot to trot to try U.S. and Israeli actors for 9/11, and that's who did it. Well, let them go off and, you know, form their own tribunal. Now, I don't know what they're going to do. Last I heard that they're going to write a book, but that's not the point. We were engaged as war crime judges and as a tribunal for one purpose, and that is to identify the accused behind, the key accused behind the false flag operation of 9/11. And Fetzer and his witnesses did not deliver the goods. So we, within our prerogative as a tribunal, reached out to other witnesses who had evidences that would, that satisfied the need for evidence here,
Alfred,
for those UK witnesses. Now,
if I may, Alfred,
yeah.
Did you make this decision on your own, or was the tribunal unanimous in this?
Oh, we Judge Fogel was here at my house. We were very sad when this whole thing broke down. And people were very, very sorry. And Dean Hartwell, who is one of the witnesses who refused to go along with what Fetzer and Barrett were proposing, because he is an attorney himself, and he said, no, the tribunal is following the law. And, you know, Fetzer and Barrett were really trying to start a mob. And do not have an understanding of what an independent tribunal is. You see, when conference organizers come and choose judges, it's not like choosing speakers at a conference. When you choose judges and you set up a tribunal, that tribunal is independent. The organizers have delegated to the tribunal the task of making judicial decisions as to, in this case, probable cause to bring an indictment.
Alfred, hold on.
Yeah.
The 9/11 Commission, six out of the 10 commissioners came out and said we were set up to fail, we weren't allowed to question the testimony, we weren't allowed to interview the witnesses we wanted, I had to be behind closed doors and blah, 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 and they got demonized after this. Do you see a parallel here?
Well, whatever the parallel is, the 9/11 Commission was a governmental body. We are a tribunal of conscience. I'm a judge on the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal. I've been a 9/11 researcher and activist since day one of 9/11. Judge Fogel has been a 9/11 activist and, in fact, a signatory of lawyers for 9/11 Truth, and her political party The Canadian Action Party is the only political party in Canada to have called for an independent inquiry into 9/11, which was a great act of political courage here. So you can imagine that to attempt to have conference organizers come against two judges like this and attempt to dictate to the court is mistaken. We found that Barrett and Fetzer and those speakers had no concept of how to speak to a tribunal and to judges. They're sorely undereducated. They do not know what a tribunal is and how one cannot insult a tribunal and expect it to follow orders of organizers. And so the tribunal had to repudiate that and to move on. Now, I must say that we have moved on. These issues, as far as the tribunal is concerned, have been settled long ago. The documents are online at our website. We are now preparing the indictments and making plans for our plan of action. Our plan of action of the tribunal is online at 911warcrimestribunal.org. It's a plan of action starting in 2013 on January 22nd, 2013, with international organizations, with the ICC, with the Organization of American States, with various parliaments, with the U.S. Congress, with district attorneys in the U.S., and with various other entities. So we are moving forward. We're not looking back. Our court had a moment of sadness when this occurred. Fetzer and Barrett were projecting that it was all me, Alfred Weber, but that's not true. It was a court. It was a citizens' tribunal of witnesses and judges, all of whom were in unanimity that this is the action going forward, and who are very happy in moving forward. And we gave Fetzer and Barrett and their group every opportunity to join us and to have their testimony on board. We were utterly civil. It was them that chose to opt out. It's just a shame. And we believe that they've gone silent because after all their grandstanding and rhetorical moments, which tends to be the style among those two, they know that there's no substance, and it's our tribunal which is now carrying on.
So let's talk about the end game here. I mean, all I really have the intention to do is talk to you, talk to Jim, talk to Kevin, and talk to Andrew and Bernie and all those kind of people, and just get everybody's side of the story. My end game is just to find out whatever the truth is and whoever's wrong.
Yeah,
or whoever's,
yeah, good. Well, look,
you know, just
we have now in this hour presented the point of view. You're speaking to a judge of the 9/11 War Crimes Tribunal. We presented the point of view of the tribunal. We are charged under natural law with evaluating evidence, prosecuting, trying, and convicting 9/11 accused. And that's our mission. And it's way beyond the person of Alfred Weber or Connie Fogel. This is a tribunal, and we're acting as judges.
Well, look at it this way, ladies and gentlemen. You got 3,000 people that were incinerated to dust on that day, and you've got all these first responders who are dying of asbestos poisoning in their lungs every single fracking day, and you've got a whole bunch of people who, instead of making it about them and about justice, make it about themselves. And it's not about that. This is about something more. meaningful and something, well, beyond each and every one of us. True justice. Divine in a way. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guest is Alfred Labremont Weber, judge. And in fact, Alfred, have you heard of the cartoon and also the recent movie Judge Dredd?
Judge Dredd?
Yeah.
I may have heard glimmers of it, but tell me about it.
All right. You know how the Agenda 21 protocol is to get everybody off the land and force them into these huge megacities that's connected by superhighways and everybody to live in these massive slave blocks and have these really nasty kind of police officers that are judge, jury, and executioner to enforce the rule over all of the slaves?
Oh, yeah.
Judge Dredd.
Ah.
And I came up with a concept of this because you're Judge Alfred, you know, and Judge Dredd is spelled with two D's, so we do Judge Alfred. And Judge Dredd is a character that never takes off his helmet. He never breaks his visage. He is kind of like a very hardened veteran type thing who dispenses justice according to the law, according to the rules, right? He's
right.
Unwavering. It doesn't matter how powerful the criminals or scum within a megacity that he's going up against. He applies the law as it is written and dispenses justice the way it should, right? And so we've got Judge Alfred, and we've got on the left of Judge Alfred, with it's basically your face with the Judge Dredd helmet on, we've got the 9/11 towers blowing up into dust. And on the other side, the way that you're actually facing, we've got George W. Bush and Tony Blair recoiling in fear like cowardly criminals from your gaze.
Yeah, well, you know, as well they might, of course, they're just kind of hired guns. They're just front men. They're just shills. They're not the capital behind it. But I'm happy to talk about the 9/11 War Crimes Tribunal. I feel from the tribunal's point of view, and I am here as a representative of the tribunal. I feel that we've set the record straight, and I'm ready for the second hour to kind of shift hats to my hat as a futurist. And to talk about a subject that I've actually been researching for now 39 years, since 1973. And when I published my first book in the area in 1974, called The Age of Cataclysm, if that suits you, I don't know whether you feel that complete.
That was our original intention for this interview,
yeah.
And that's what happened with Andrew and Bernie as well. When I had them on, we spent the first hour talking about and clearing the air about this 9/11 subject.
Oh, good.
And the second hour going into what you actually really wanted to talk about, because that's kind of like visiting stuff in the past, and we're just doing it to you know, make sure that it's at least out
great.
There and it's been said. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, good. Yeah, well, tell me when to start.
Right now.
Oh, good.
No better time like the present, as a time traveler told me.
Yeah. Well, you know, people always say there is a misconception that the whole subject of Planet X, which actually has many different names. We can call it Herculebus, Nibiru, Planet X, Tyche, Nemesis, Wormwood, that it's something that does not have any substance to it. And that is very misleading, because the cover-up of Planet X, Nemesis, Nibiru is probably much more intense than any cover-up regarding 9/11. And they are, in fact, connected, because in the same way that Project Pegasus had time travel images in 1971, they had moving images of 9/11, which then were shared with the defense attaché, Donald H. Rumsfeld, and surely got back to the Nixon cabinet, Henry A. Kissinger. Well, in 1971 as well, there was a one-time probe, DARPA Chronovisor probe, to the year 2013. And you can query Andrew D. Bishago about it when he's here next in a couple of weeks, as you indicated, that in 2013 he found in this one-time probe the U.S. Supreme Court building in Washington, D.C., under 100 feet of brackish water. And that was so alarming to the lieutenant commander that debriefed him, that the lieutenant commander reportedly, you know, spilled his glass of water and lit up a cigarette and was pacing around. But most importantly, that information that Washington, D.C., the U.S. Capitol, and the Supreme Court building was under 100 feet of brackish water in 2013 was undoubtedly transmitted by Donald H. Rumsfeld into the Nixon cabinet, and has resulted, as of today, in the building, the fact that we have at least 174 deep underground military bases into which the financial and political elite of the planet, you can call them the Matrix, you can call them the Illuminati, you can call them the New World Order, that is the top of the list, and the monarchs and the top of the banking list, and the entire governments, all of the armed forces, all of the technocrats and scientists, those scientists who bring you such miracles as GMOs and HARP, the medical personnel that bring you all the vaccines, and all those nice folks will be going underground. In a worst-case scenario where we may very well have a global coastal event, and we can discuss a number of studies that show what the possibility is of having a global coastal event, and that show why this is being hidden. And the answer is that it's being hidden as a depopulation device. Very simply, the global elite, knowing that there's a possibility that a brown dwarf star, twin to our sun, with an elliptical orbit that's about 45 degrees to the ecliptic, the ecliptic being the plane in which all the planets rotate, so that it's very difficult to detect until it's almost upon us, and that star is now in the outer solar system and coming into the inner solar system, may get as close as 2.85 astronomical units from our sun. That's what, about 190-200 million miles, creating an enormous magnetic tug between the two celestial bodies that in turn create huge solar flares and solar storms in our sun that can devastate our planet. Some say even creating a pole shift and create the global coastal event that the 1971 DARPA probe to 2013 saw. There was also another 2010 Farsight Institute remote viewing probe in June, that was done in 2010, and it was done of June 2013. And in that, 39% of the military-trained remote viewers found a global coastal event and devastated coastal cities and populations. There were 8 different locations worldwide. One of them was the U.S. Capitol. They found it, oddly enough, the same way that the 1971 DARPA chronovisor time travel probe found the U.S. Supreme Court building underwater. They found the U.S. Capitol devastated and right by deep water. And these are two independent studies. The one did not know about the other. One of the other eight locations was the Sydney Opera House. And depending on the conditions of the study, there were 3 different conditions that they did, each more catastrophic than the other. But under the most catastrophic, there was no Sydney Opera House and no Sydney, Australia. And on others, the Sydney, Australia Opera House was sort of gone, and there were people staggering out of Sydney, Australia on foot because there were no trains, buses, automobiles, airplanes. All the transportation had been destroyed. All infrastructure had been destroyed. And all governments and military personnel had gone into underground bases, which exist in every country. Which is secret. And so the New World Order knows about this, but the population is being held in ignorance. And this is a cover-up, and this is a false flag operation that every other one pales in significance with regard to this one, because it involves an extinction-level event toward the surface population of the human species, and in essence provides for the survival of what we can call the New World Order. So we have actually, Vinny, been studying this now for 39 years, has been our study of Nemesis, Planet X, Herculebus, Nibiru, whatever you want to call it. And we can go through, and I can walk you through the various stages of our research if that's what you want to do.
By all means, Alfred, you know, take the liberty. That's how I like my show to be, is just basically where you want to go, whatever you think is most poignant, that's where I'd prefer that you go, because that's what you'll be best at talking about at this particular moment, isn't it?
Okay, good. Well, the way that I came upon it was starting in 1973, when I was general counsel of the Environmental Protection Administration, and I began to look outside the particular paradigm that I was in into a multi-dimensional paradigm, and began to read books like Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain by Ostrander and Schroeder, and became acquainted with various experts, including a professor of experimental psychology at Rutgers University, who was also an expert in parapsychology and psychic cognition, as well as extraterrestrial studies. And I began my study of an American psychic named Edgar Cayce, who some of your viewers may be familiar with his name and his work. He lived from 1877 to 1945, and he's most famous for about 9 or 10,000 cases of healing at a distance, psychic healing at a distance, where he would just have to be presented with the name or the photograph of a person, and he would diagnose that person and heal them at a difference at a distance with a great degree of accuracy. And there are many books written about this. Well, he also had a series of he remote viewed, what we can call it, one of the early remote viewings that is in a psychic state of a global coastal event. And this is a devastating cataclysmic event where all the human settlements and landforms are greatly affected. And what the Cayce global coastal event found, and this was he went to the future and saw that. He saw destructive earthquake activity along the West Coast U.S., disappearance of the southern portions of Carolina and Georgia, disappearance of the greater portion of Japan under the sea, rapid earth changes in the upper portion of Europe, emptying of the Great Lakes into the Gulf of Mexico, the rising of new lands along the east coast of the U.S., dramatic changes along the U.S. east coast, including the destruction of New York, upheavals of the earth in the Arctic and the Antarctic, volcanic eruptions in the torrid zones, and a shift in the axis of the earth.
Indeed, and I've heard this from so many different sources, you know, people who have been in government programs, out of government programs, psychics, spiritual people, people on experiencing psychedelics. They all seem to be coming up with a lot of these conclusions, and a lot of people come up with other ones as well. We'll be right back with Alfred Labremont Weber just after. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that frequently treads where others fear to tread and dare not. Hey, and speaking of which, we're talking to Andrew Passaggio, right? And he's talking about how he wants time travel technology to be released to the public and teleportation and all of this kind of stuff. And it's basically because he doesn't like being stuck in traffic in Seattle, you know? I came up with actually a listener sent me this thing, and I've decided to turn it into like a little protest chant, and I'll see if I can get it working here for you.
What do we want? Time travel. When do we want it? Irrelevant.
All right. Well, my very special guest, Alfred Weber, is here with us today. So, Alfred, welcome back.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's a very apt chant, and Yeah, so this was back in 1973, and I wrote a book in 73. It was published in 1974 by G.P. Putnam's and Berkeley Medallion Worldwide. It was published in Japan, and it, you know, was in all the airport bookstores, and I was on national TV in the U.S. and in Canada and had my 15 minutes of fame. It found that the Earth sciences were congruent with a global coastal event, and that is that, yeah, the Earth could have a global coastal event in a way that Edgar Cayce's remote viewing had seen. And readers who want to read that, you can go to our website, exopolitics.com, and you can download, just go to the right-hand menu there, and you can click on The Age of Cataclysm, and you can download a free copy of the book there. And a used copy, we checked on Amazon, is going for like $150, so it's a good bargain. So anyway, that was sort of my documenting of what I call the catastrophic timeline, because I think that what I've been able to document is that there's actually a number of timelines, and one we can call the catastrophic timeline, and the other we can call a positive timeline. And that my hypothesis is that the Earth has now shifted to a positive timeline, and that the timeline that the New World Order was on in 1971, in which they made $2 to $3 billion of black budget investments to build 174 plus deep underground military bases, is actually a catastrophic timeline that has shifted, and that we're not going to have these gross cataclysms. But let me go forward and present all the evidence so that we can, you know, people can make up their own minds, you know, based on this rational evidence, and then, you know, see, do I want to identify with the New World Order and their underground bases, or do I want to identify with a positive timeline, with the fact that we are landing what some people say is paradise on Earth, and we'll be there by sometime in 2025 or so. So after I wrote The Age of Cataclysm in 74, then in 1999, I wrote a book on the positive timeline, which was Exopolitics, that founded the science of intelligent civilizations in the multiverse, and that explored the positive timeline. And their readers can also find out that book was actually taken back from 2005 when it was published back to 1971, where Andy Bashago and two other witnesses that were part of Project Pegasus saw it physically. It was time traveled back from 2005, at least, back to at least 1971 by CIA and DARPA. So they had it, and they were circulating my book, Exopolitics, around in 1971. And I was then general counsel of the Environmental Protection Administration of New York, and I was actually invited at that time under false pretenses. My job was to give talks on the environment, and this group came up and invited me to go. I went down, they took me almost down to Washington, D.C. I went to this office building. I spoke to almost 50 men in suits, very much different from the housewife and students of the normal environmental group. I sensed that they were like, you know, spooks or spies, but I just gave my standard stump speech on the environment. But they were actually checking me over because they had my book that I would write in 1999 that would be published in 2005, that would be published on the internet as a free book in the year 2000, that would launch the exopolitics paradigm, that would result in 50 governments by now opening up their UFO files, and that we would find ourselves on 19th October 2012 talking about here. So they wanted to see what I was like in 1971. That's what I call time travel surveillance. So that's how Andy Bisciaga and I end up being what we call time quantum entangled. Quantum entangled. Entangled in the quantum access process. So kind of moving along here then, there are various data points that we've talked about that at first glance tended to confirm the fact that we may have a global coastal event sometime in 2013 or, you know, in the near future. And that was the 1971 DARPA chronovisor probe, which saw the U.S. Supreme Court building under 100 feet of brackish water in Washington, D.C. in June of 2013, even though it was done in 1971. And then the 2010 study by the Farsight Institute, in which they saw, yes, a global coastal event, very much like what Edgar Cayce had foreseen that I'd written The Age of Cataclysm about, which is what would happen if a brown dwarf star twin to our sun came into the inner solar system and wreaked havoc with our sun, and all these meteors came in and these solar storms and pole shifts, and we would really have a havoc here. Now, why do I say that it's probably not going to happen? Why is it that we are on a positive timeline where the New World Order said we are on a catastrophic timeline? Well, there we have to go into exopolitics. And I welcome all of your readers now all of your listeners to go to exopolitics.com, which is our website, because you'll be able to see the photographs there that are in this article. And the first photograph, of course, that we have at the top, figure one, is one of the first public photographs of the Planet X system, which was shot by the Max Planck Institute. This is how we broke through the NASA CIA cover-up of Planet X. And you can see it there in figure one at the top of the article at exopolitics.com. Now, going further down into the article, we have at figure two and three, we have these photographs of the sun, and what do we see there? We see giant triangular portals and UFOs that are the size of planets around the sun. Now, what are they doing there? And we have videos of a giant planet-sized UFOs around the sun that are shooting lasers into the sun. We have these large rods around the sun. Well, one hypothesis is that these are extraterrestrial craft and ultra-dimensional UFO craft, which are photographed around the sun, which are actually installing shielding mechanisms to shield the solar system and Earth from the solar flares and storms that Nemesis, Planet X, Nibiru, Wormwood, the Destroyer, may cause. And you can go there and look at these photographs. And we found that there's an exopolitical precedent for this. This year, in 2012, there were historic, literally historic artifacts that were released by the Mexican government, which are ancient Mayan artifacts, which show, guess what, extraterrestrial craft with the sun with triangle stargates, where they depict the sun as a singularity, i.e. as a portal for interdimensional UFO craft to come through. They depict planet-sized UFOs around the sun, and they're deflecting comet and a planet that's headed for Earth, i.e. shielding the Earth from the effects of the passages, so that one hypothesis for why there's a positive timeline is that, oh yes, it may be that we have a planet X that's coming in, and it may be that using time travel and other sources, the New World Order in 1971 saw all of this. They diverted $2 to $3 billion and built 174 secret deep underground military bases, otherwise known as DUMs, but the galactic fleet of the upper dimensional ethical extraterrestrial have other plans, and that is to protect Homo sapiens, which is, in our original blueprint, a 12-strand DNA light being in the third dimension that was created by a consortium of Pleiadians, Alpha Centaurians, Sirians, and other advanced human extraterrestrial races, and that those races are not about to experience the destruction of their creation at the hands of a satanic or, you know, lower order New World Order power elite led by banking and satanic monarchical forces who built these underground bases. So that's part of the exopolitical drama which is occurring now. Now, we also have photographs from Bonnie Gilson, who has published, this is a photograph taken over Melbourne, Australia, in a commercial jet on May 28, 2012, showing the Herculebus Planet X system. And it is almost identical in configuration in the next figure 6, which is a depiction of the Avery crop circle, which has a depiction of the Planet X configuration, which is identical to what was photographed over Melbourne, Australia on May 28, 2012, and show this, we're having what even the upper dimensional ETs, those crop circle makers, are now predicting is coming in. And so these are some of the reasons why, and to get into a further reason, which derives from the testimony of Bernard Mendez, who is one of the witnesses to the 1980s CIA jump room program. What Bernard Mendez has testified to, and listeners can go to a seminar with Andy Bishago and Bernard Mendez that was held in Vancouver, British Columbia, moderated by myself. It was held under the auspices of Exo University, and that's at www.exouniversity.org. That was held on June 1st, 2012. And what Bernard Mendez and Andy Bishago can corroborate, what their team was able to find was a total of 153 or so what are called synthetic quantum environments. These are sort of holographic environments created in near space up to 400 miles out under the surface of the Earth, or in some places
and some other places as well. Okay, final segment coming up, ladies and gentlemen, rounding off the week. And also in a couple of hours' time, if you happen to be in Auckland, there will be a conference being held at the Greyland Community Centre at 4 p.m. where we might be showing a DVD, The Great Culling, a premiere of New Zealand. We'll be right back. FreedomRadio.com. Exposing scumbaggery, speaking the truth, but no taboo topics, and massive guests, and cool as frack hosts. Dude, this is the place you want to be listening to talk radio. Speaking of which, if you go to the Listen Live page of AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the amount of visits that have been there since Independence Day, July the 4th, 2011, is now 999,797 in counting. So, I would love it to break the million mark during my show. So, if you're listening to American Freedom Radio right now, what I'd love you to do is, like, put up on your Facebook or something, like, right this second, you know, listen to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, just click on the live stream, just for a second or something like that, beef that up to a million, it'd be cool. But anyway, it probably won't happen. So, in the meantime, I've got just a quick announcement for the New Zealanders listening in Auckland. At 4 p.m, it's now currently like nearly 1 p.m, the Greyland Community Centre will be hopefully screening The Great Culling, the new Paul Wittenberger film, maker of Why in the World Are They Spraying This, first of, in three installments about air, food and water. This first one is about water fluoride and all of this other sort of stuff. So it's going to be really, really cool. And we need, so this is the emergency part of it. We don't yet have the projector or a TV screen or anything actually sorted in order to get that actually played there. So if you know somebody who's got a big flat screen or a projector with a screen or something like that, we've already got a DVD player and a... and some sound organized, but if you've got that or know somebody who does, you need to be getting on your phone, getting and stop listening to the show if need be, you know, just get out there, find them and contact me within a few minutes after the show ends today. So that's all taken care of. Housekeeping. And my very special guest, Alfred Blair of Montweb. And we've got final segment here, Alfred. Is there anything you'd like to finally round?
Yeah. Just to finish up on the point that I was making, and that is that Bernard Mendez and Andy Bishago, who you'll be having on in a couple of weeks, if I understood you correctly, they have now come forth with a very important revelation, and that is that as a result of the 1980s CIA jump room, they discovered that a species of grays have constructed 153 holographic environments around the planet, mostly in space, about 400 miles out, some of them under the surface of the Earth or on the Earth. But these are kind of like Disneylands in space, and they were meant sort of like a psychological operation on humanity, whom the Greys thought were not ready for space travel. And so one alternative hypothesis is that in those studies, for example, Edgar Cayce with his remote viewing, the 1971 DARPA probe, which saw the global coastal event, Washington, D.C., under 100 feet of brackish water, and the 2010 Farsight Institute report that saw another, the same global coastal event in June of 2013, what they were picking up on is not a real future, but rather one of these synthetic quantum environments that is a hologram in space of an Earth devastated by cataclysm, which the Greys had constructed. Now, that's an alternative theory. But I think that it's more probable that what the reality is, or what the reality may be, because we're getting phenomena like an enormous amount of comets coming our way, much more than expected, and coming our way from one source, which means that there's something pushing them our way, which is probably this source, this nemesis or her colubus, which could be a brown dwarf, or it could be a great comet, which they're expecting a great comet in November 2013, which will be, quote, 15 times brighter than the moon. And that could cause great havoc, and that's why the New World Order built the 174 bases underground so that they could survive and we could be depopulated. But in fact, what's happening is that the advanced extraterrestrials, and you can go online to Soho and a lot of these images, they're online at YouTube and elsewhere, you'll see these giant UFOs around the sun. They're building shields and mechanisms to shield the Earth from the giant, so any giant solar flares that may occur, if they do occur, from any flyby of this celestial object. Okay, so with that, I turn it over to you, Vinny.
Okay. I was wondering, like, the end of the world to me is part of a three-way thing, and the future's not set. Our fate is what we make. I think it's a quote from Terminator, ironically. And what I've determined is it's like there's three things here. Number one, the prophesized destruction, return of the destroyer, and we're all fracked, or it's that kind of negative aspect of doomsday or the Battle of Armageddon, biblical prophecy, and all of this sort of stuff coming through. It's bad, but it'll be better later on. The other one is, it's all just a massive freaking psyop designed to really scare people into doing nothing, thinking that, oh, everything's going to end anyway, and then just accepting the New World Order without a fight, while you're all worried about the end of the world. And the last one is part of a renewal, advancements, an evolution, a golden age of mankind, where all of the scumbaggery, the lies, the deception, and BS, and people being disconnected from each other, people fighting over every little thing, suddenly you realize that that's not worth it anymore. And we start to become better people for it. And it'd be like our species is non-recognizable. I don't like that. Because when you look at our species at the moment, you got to wonder, are the vast majority of people good as we'd like them to be, or are the vast majority of people under the control of people that we would never want to see?
Right, and so that in fact is totally congruent with the vision that we've put forth of the positive timeline, and that is, we are on a positive timeline, 2012 to 2025 and beyond. And by 2025, we're on objectively a blueprint to land unity consciousness on the planet, an objective condition of what we could call paradise on Earth. That we're in a transitional period now. But by 2025, that will be paradise on Earth. And what you so aptly call to be the barrier of psyops, number one, and number two, the catastrophic timeline, which the New World Order were banking on. I mean, it is It's a scientific fact that they spent $3 trillion of black budget money on 174 deep underground military bases, which do exist, which were to hide the New World Order personnel from a possible global coastal event. That is being obviated by an intervention of higher powers now, which is pushing us on to this positive timeline of creating paradise on Earth. So we're both speaking the same language.
And as creator beings, we don't need to have some other ethereal hand be the only force that is channeling us towards a positive future. We can play an active role in each and everything we do every single day. It doesn't matter whether you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker. The thing that you'll probably have in common with everybody is that you see people every day. And you've got an opportunity to talk to people every day. You've got an opportunity to have real conversations instead of BS that doesn't matter. And I think we should all take that opportunity, because otherwise, why are you here? What's the purpose of your life if you're not fulfilling something greater, if you're not trying to improve things using the talents and the skills in whatever way that you're endowed with? We all got to realize our own personal power and the capacity to shape the future as we would like to see it. It doesn't mean we'll get there. I don't believe that there's a utopia. I believe that corruption is a perennial problem. But I do believe in the power of the human spirit to save itself without having to wait around for somebody to do it for you. Thank you, Alfred, for coming on the show with us today. And if you want to check out more of his work, exopolitics.com. Of course, if anybody wants to contact me directly after the show, if they're interested in coming to the conference at the Greylin Centre at 4 p.m, just give us a bell and we'll tell you all about it. Alfred, thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much, Vinny.
We'll see you sometime, ladies and gentlemen. You have yourself a fabulous weekend.